If you're anything like me, you spent your childhood assuming that one day you'd meet your Prince Charming. You'd get married, you'd have a nice house in the suburbs, a dog, a career, and a couple of kids. It never crossed your mind that Prince Charming wouldn't come along, or that tragically you'd lose him before his time, or that your marriage wouldn't work out, or even that your biological clock would have other ideas. Or maybe you never really wanted that sort of happily ever after. Maybe you never wanted a man, but you did know you always wanted children. We're living in an age where, for the first time, women can embrace motherhood on their own terms. They no longer have to put their lives on hold waiting for the right man, or settling for someone who they know isn't right for them, just so they can become a mother. More women than ever before are embarking on the journey to become what's known as a solo mother by choice. And while for a lot of us it doesn't feel like a choice, but more a necessity, the bottom line is there are now options for you to be able to fulfill your dreams of motherhood if the traditional route isn't playing out as expected. The No Need for Prince Charming podcast will share stories of Australian women who have successfully become solo mothers by choice. They each have a unique story as to why they decided to pursue motherhood in this way and the journey they had to go through to make this dream a reality. The hope is that by sharing these stories, you'll have the knowledge and the confidence to embark on this amazing journey yourself if you determine it's the right one for you. In the words of Walt Disney, all of our dreams can come true if we have the courage to pursue them. All you need is faith, trust, and a little bit of pixie dust. So welcome to the podcast tonight, Amanda. I would love to start by understanding, I guess, what journey you went through to decide to become a solo mom by choice to start.
I sometimes look back on it and feel like it wasn't actually a decision. It's like what came about naturally, because I was probably in my mid-30s, not seeing anyone, and thought, I'll just look into my fertility and see where I'm at egg-wise. And straight away I was told, you've got low egg reserve. One day when you'll need it, like when you want to have kids, you'll need help. So I had this name specialist like tucked away in my phone probably for about 6 years. And then I got to about, well, I got busy dating like we've talked about. And I was dating with a purpose and I was always on full speed. Like, this is my husband. This, you know, because of that biological clock. And actually had a name for it. It's like the biological clock ticking panic.
Yeah.
And that's what it is, because you're like, the guys could be 90 and I might have a kid, I might not. But the guys I was dating either weren't ready, even though they were my age, or I was just being too fast and just pushing them away with my wanting to be a mum desperation. So here I am, not finding the right person. And I think, oh, okay, I'm 40. I'm going to look into freezing my eggs. Like, what a great, you know, out there idea. And I got laughed at when I went to a very well-known female fertility specialist, and I just got really dejected and thought, oh, so I'm not going to be able to do this freezing my eggs thing. So I went back to my little note and found this name of this male who basically said to me, if you're ready for the long haul, we'll have a go at it. So he knew I had to try my own eggs first. So what brought me to it was there was no time for freezing eggs. I just had to go straight into, let's just try IVF. Let's just give your eggs a whirl and see what happens. So
did you go into that appointment to freeze your eggs thinking that you were going to use donor sperm, or
yes,
were you just freezing your eggs?
No. I was freezing with a purpose. Even if I thought freezing eggs, I hadn't thought about using that. It was just always going to be a putting it away for later. So I thought, and in research I had, you know, found that embryos were more successful than eggs. And I guess at some stage I had just contemplated, I'm going to need those eggs sooner rather than later, so just get onto it. And I'm a person who is petrified of needles. So welcome to
great combo.
And you know what? It's like I've had to turn myself into my own nurse, because I've had to jab myself in the stomach, leg, wherever, so many times, you know, with the sweaty, my hands are even sweating just thinking about it, sweaty palms. And I feel like I'm jumping a little bit about, but I had to go and get a procedure just to remove some polyps or whatever. And I made myself watch the anaesthetist put my cannula in my hands. He goes, what are you doing? Shouldn't you look away? And I said, no, I need to learn this. I need to get over it and just watch him do it. And got over it, did all the injections and everything else. again, I'm jumping about a little bit, but I never even got to use my own eggs. So what happened was you go for that lovely scan, one follicle.
Wow. Okay.
So he's like, well, you've tried. It's like, you know, you get the car to the mechanic and they do all the things that they can do and you go to turn the engine on and nothing happens. So he said, basically, don't pull the trigger because, yeah, all you need is one egg, but what if that's not one good quality egg? Let's try another month. We waited another month, didn't get my period. So I don't know if you want that too much information, but I never got to try again. So, you know, you get all your bag of drugs, all of that, and I'm like, well, now what? My eggs are no good. What do I do? I mean, I was attached to my donor sperm. Like I'm talking, I had researched, I had a spreadsheet, I had my favorite, I had him on hold and I couldn't use him. And so I had to sort of give that up, but temporarily because he came back with the donor egg that I tried. We're up to, I'm 41 and a half and I realize I'm going to need donor eggs. So I get on the forums, and that's within Australia. And you learn the word altruistic. No person can be paid for their eggs in Australia. So it is obviously what we call donor angels. There are these beautiful angels walking this earth that want to donate their embryo, their eggs, sorry. And there's a lot of similarities between the dating world and the egg donor world. You know, you start these, what I call false starts, you start these relationships and you start chatting to a person and then they ghost you or they lead you down the garden path. It's really quite harsh and beautiful at the same time, because if you can find those beautiful people that really want to do it and will follow through, they're the genuine ones. I'm not sure why all the false starts were happening, whether they just changed their mind or you know, they're a stranger to me, so they don't owe me anything.
So is this and just like through a Facebook group or forums or things? There's nothing regulated about it?
Egg Donation Australia.
Okay.
I believe it's through EDA. You know, some of that details have sort of gone from even out, but you need to, it's monitored. It's not just a free-for-all Facebook page. And even beyond that, I actually had, and this was quite surprising, multiple girlfriends offer, go and check out my fertility. I'll go and check out, see if I've got any eggs for you. And I'm not talking just in conversation. I'm talking, I went down the road with two very good friends quite far. We got to counselling, we got to medical testing. And for one reason or another, their eggs weren't suited. Either they were close to my age and didn't have much better, you know, fertility than me, or medical reasons why. So that absolutely floored me.
That they would need to be under sort of 35 to donate?
Yes, yes and no. So one of them was and one of them wasn't. And like I look at my girlfriend who is, you know, having that pregnancy at 46, there's obviously, you know, certain people that could have donated, you know, not being under that 35 age. So that floored me a little bit as well, because when I went to my counselling, she used the term ingredients. You just need a little bit more ingredients. It's a way you can explain to your future child that, you know, you needed, it's like you're baking a cake. And I just didn't have, I've got the oven, but I just didn't have enough of the right ingredients. Exactly. Always that bun in the oven scenario that you refer to. And I actually met the most like beautiful egg donor that, if it was my dating world, this woman would have been like my soulmate if we're comparing the dating. So this woman, I'll give you her name, Madeline. She is still in my life now. She lives in South Australia. Her mum and my mum were both born in the same town in Italy, and there was all these like connections that like we were getting along so well, and we just went for it. And this is talking COVID time. So we had all the time in the world to sit and chat and message and everything else. And lovely, fertile Madeline had five kids. So she's, you know, done. Set for life, done. Yep. COVID sort of put a little bit of a break on things, and yet not really. So she actually lives in South Australia. So I'm talking, you know, having to get those eggs frozen, get those eggs transferred to Victoria, then get them defrosted or whatever you call it, and then get them put together with my, yeah, put with my frozen sperm. So all of this happened in COVID times, and we were so excited. Like, this woman put her body through what I couldn't, all the injections, the operation, and, you know, trying to shuffle five kids and a partner. And She got 16 eggs. And like those days from between the eggs and the delivery of the eggs and freezing of the eggs and getting to Victoria and getting to use my chosen Victorian donor sperm was amazing. And just to quickly say, out of those 16, 13 came across to Victoria. So I thought, I've got so many
Amazing.
chances. How exciting. We got 11 thawed. That's even still a fantastic number. And it just goes to show you how much the numbers go down, down, down. Seven fertilized. And I kept getting those phone calls and I was like, yeah, we're still good. We're still good. Day three, six. We've got six embryos. And I called myself an embryo mama. Like that was my, achievement. I'm like, I'm almost there. We get to day five and there's still six. I'm like, well, six keeps coming up. So this is, we're set. I'm going to get six goes at trying to get pregnant. I get the phone call, zero made it. They couldn't test any of them. I've got goosebumps just saying it. Couldn't test any, couldn't freeze any embryos, and they've got no reason for me as to why that happened. So I don't understand how they got to day five and
And didn't
nothing.
turn into blasts
And
or
this
something.
whole big build up, and I was absolutely devastated. And this angel, Madeline, says to me, I've saved some medication, as in we can do it again. And then I get the phone call. She's 3 weeks pregnant with number six. She says, I can do it again in 2 years, but I'm having this last baby. And I think amazing for her, number six, miracle,
Great for you.
super fertile. And that's my donor egg angel gone, egg donor angel. So it was a shift in our relationship because, we were so, in contact so often and all of that leading up to it, because obviously, I want to know everything that she's going through and support her as much as I can from a state away, to then I've had to let her go, have her pregnancy and, excuse me, be as healthy as she can be and not feel the pressure from me that she's let me down in any way. So I really wanted to make sure she knew how grateful I was and am. So she has been supportive of my swerve in my journey. So even before I had all of these beautiful offers, in my mind and in my research, I had found out that there were two places overseas that were just on the internet well known for solo mums, Spain and Greece. You hear about it all the time. Or it could be a same-sex couple or really just egg donor, in supply over there. And in overseas they get paid for it, so that's a very big
Big
difference.
difference, yeah.
Yes. Because my family's of Italian heritage, it was, I guess, maybe even my mum's suggestion, Spain's sort of close by, let's go to Spain. And I looked into the place called IVF Spain. That's a pretty simple name. And they're
Original
in
name,
Alicante. Yeah,
yes.
really, really original. And it was only actually a matter of about 4 months from me making the phone call to I did a Zoom call. I mean, not a phone call or internet inquiry. I did a Zoom call with the actual fertility doctor. And then I could have gone even a month later. But what they do is, what they call mock trials. So you get all the drugs. So basically, you need someone supporting you here. So my beautiful IVF fertility specialist here would write me all the scripts from the Spanish doctor telling me you need to do this, this, and this. And then he would send me off to the ultrasound as if I was going to get the transfer that day. And then IVF Spain would get the report and they would calculate really specifically, right, in your cycle, it would be this day that it would work. So I did that twice. And then the third month, I actually went to Spain, so I'll get to that
Did
part.
your Melbourne clinic have a relationship with that the Spain clinic originally, or was that something you
N
facilitated?
not at all, but he had history with other patients who had gone to Spain. So there's no connection. They don't know any names or anything over there. It was just they know that women do this, and he knows me, and he knows I wasn't going to stop. So one of his first things ever saying to me was, it's such a long haul. Are you in it for the long haul? Like you walk in there wanting to walk out pregnant. That's not going to happen. You really need some patience and some determination. So I just kept saying I was tenacious. It's one of the words that comes to mind. I just did not give up. And so I had to get special permission to go to Spain because it was COVID. Melbourne was locked down and you weren't allowed on a flight. So I got permission from the government and it was considered to be emergency medical necessity because of my age. And because I'd already started medication and actually got rejected the first time, like I'm talking booked flights, booked accommodation, flying during COVID, wearing a mask for 2 days deal. And my application got rejected. And so I had to get more information from the clinic in Spain. So in the end, it got approved.
I'm
So
not
I went.
surprised. My friends were trying to move back to New Zealand. He's a Kiwi and his wife wasn't allowed out of the country. And they
And I
had to
feel,
apply, I think, 4 times to be able to
yes,
leave.
I
So
feel
I'm
so
surprised you got
bad.
to go.
Yes, all these people, and like I'm talking like I said, nothing was stopping, but all these people couldn't get home. Like, you heard on the news every day, people are stranded. And there was that cap that they would only let a certain amount of people back in Australia. So it was on the other end of coming home is a whole nother battle. But I managed to make it, booked it in, and I'm talking like a bag of drugs, like I looked and I'm talking like a carry-on luggage, because I thought, well, if I come back pregnant, I don't want a big suitcase. So a carry-on luggage only. And I took probably 30 pregnancy tests in that carry-on luggage because I thought if I'm away for a couple of weeks in Spain, a couple of weeks quarantine, I need those pregnancy tests. And I used every single one of them daily.
Just
Could
imagine a
you?
carry-on bag full of needles, drugs, and pregnancy tests. No
And
clothes. Just wear the same thing every
no
day.
one looked sideways. Like, I don't get how that was so easy.
No, especially because it's COVID times. Wow.
Because it's COVID time. As long as you've got your mask on, you can have your bag of drugs. And I had my little, needle dispenser, and I'm trying to calculate, well, if I'm on this stopover, what tablet or what pessary am I doing? Like, it was a real
Working
big
out
science.
time differences. Oh,
All of that. It was, and I had a friend help me do that. The same friend who's about to have number three at 46. She was very good with an Excel spreadsheet. So that was a very big help. And then get to Spain and I do some blood testing and they realize with the time difference that I actually needed to be transferred 1 day earlier. Happens to be a Sunday. Now this is a small, like imagine a small hospital. They opened the hospital slash clinic just for me. It was me, an embryologist, an acupuncturist, and a nurse, and the fertility doctor. And no one else in the whole entire place. And I get the
Oh, how eerie.
what do you call it, like the transfer, special driver to a closed gate. And we had to get, I don't even know if it was the embryologist or the receptionist to let us in. Like it was just the most bizarre situation. And then I have the lovely, acupuncture before and after. And I should just quickly mention that for years I worked on my health to get not even pregnancy ready. It was more fertility ready. And then it switched to pregnancy or uterine health. And so I had a lot of acupuncture, fitness, diet, all of that sort of thing, wanting to make sure I was the healthiest I could be. And so in my mind, I thought, yep, you always hear acupuncture helps it stick, helps you prepare and helps you relax. So he had me wrapped up in, seven blankets and legs in the air and all of that. So it was a weird but wonderful experience. And even the fertility specialist, he says, let's go get you pregnant. And I'm even just saying those words, like it just sounds so bizarre going into a surgery, like, oh, not surgery, what do you call it? Like a
Theatre,
theatre, yeah. And
like four
he,
people, and that's in the
yeah.
hospital.
And there's a little screen and it's got like the picture, you get to see it on the screen, like scientists would look at the microscope. And then afterwards, when it was transferred, and I've got, to take home that picture, and I still look at that, now. And it's hard because people, go and get all their testing and things done locally, whereas I could only, take what I could. And then, I have no feeling after this transfer. Like, what am I supposed to feel? I was scared to pee. I was doing all the things, imagine in a hotel room as well. What can I get that I can help myself with? And this is all those old wives' tales. Brazil nuts, pineapple, keep your feet warm. I wore socks for 2 weeks straight, except being in the shower. I had my warm Kakadu coat with my feet in the arms, to keep my feet warm. I had my tummy warm. All the things you'd think will help. I don't know what did.
Did they have McDonald's fries there?
Yes, well, not even McDonald's fries. I forgot to mention the fries, but I went to the hotel restaurant and ordered the fries. So yes, I made sure I got the fries. Can't forget the fries. And whether that all worked, who knows? But I had 5 days then because I couldn't test before 5 days. I've got my 20 pregnancy tests ready to go. And it was like 5 a.m. in the morning, and I filmed myself doing this. And I don't know how I didn't want to quickly peek and check first, but I filmed myself. And there was the faintest line positive on that pregnancy test. And this is the very first time I've ever tried to get pregnant in my life. And I was 43. And you think all those years in your 20s, don't get pregnant, don't get pregnant. And then I don't know if I was just very lucky to not have ever accidentally gotten pregnant, but this was the first time I've ever tried. And the fact that it worked first time, like I know how lucky I am and was. And I know it was like an absolute miracle. Like whatever was meant to happen, happened, because everything with the getting pregnant business all went as perfectly as it could. And then I got stuck in Spain. They cancelled my flight home. Melbourne closed down. And there was no way of getting home. And I was a hysterical mess for days and days and days, and on the phone and on the internet and trying to get home all these different ways. I got sold a flight for $4,500 that went through America that I wasn't allowed to get on. There was so many things like that. Yeah. Because even though it only transferred through America, they weren't accepting any international passengers. And it was things like that that just kept like stopping me. And my mum says even now that I actually turned her grey. So she's probably always been a little bit grey, but I'm talking hysterical phone on the phone to my mum from another country. And my mum's like, I don't know how to help you from here, with her technology or her anything, So I just would call her on her awake hours, and then I would call another friend when she went to bed. And I tried so many different ways, and in the end, I had to borrow about $15,000 to get home because I had to get a business class flight home. That flight centre helped me organise, and there was only certain airlines you could trust. It was a very bizarre time. You can't, they, you know, you used to be able to just book a flight and you get on it. And in those days, or these COVID days, whatever that time period was, there was only certain airlines you could trust, and they would say, there's obviously like a cap of how many people they would let back into Australia each day, and certain airlines were trusted to stay within that cap. So on my flight, I was the only person in the whole of business class. Like that's very bizarre. They
Doing
had a few very luxurious. It's like, could I let myself enjoy it? I tried, I really tried, but I couldn't sleep a wink. I was doing my needles and all of the business you have to do on the way home. And then even to the point of getting to the Singapore stopover, and I've heard people getting kicked off their flight and getting stuck. And so I hung around that gate and was first on that plane. And even though I had the business class flight home, I also got to Sydney because I knew I had to quarantine in Sydney. I couldn't make it to Melbourne because Melbourne was closed. And I got to the door of the plane about to step off, and they all stopped us and said, no, there's another plane that has to depart. You all need to go and sit down. And I'm talking one step off getting off the plane in Melbourne. And I said, I'm not sitting down. So I stood, and so did everyone else, for the hour or so it took to get off. And even beyond that, like I had researched, because all these people that had to go to, a tiny hotel room for quarantine with no open window, well, I knew I was a few days pregnant. And you're not a few days pregnant, you're already considered to be like 4 weeks pregnant with IVF. I don't quite understand the maths, but I knew I was pregnant. So I did the, as they say, make a fuss. I need a ho health hotel. I've got a letter that says I need certain tests from my IVF doctor. And I made sure I got a like an apartment at a health hotel. So it was connected to a hospital. So every day I would call and ask for blood tests. The nurse would come and take my blood, and they would test my My God, I've forgotten the word. What's it called?
HCG.
HCG. And the weirdest thing was, I've kind of had to turn into the nurse because the people I was calling for the results weren't the doctors to begin with. It was just like admin people in the hospital. And I'm like, I'm just calling for some results. And they would tell me. And then they actually would say to me, so what does that mean? And I'm like telling them, the reason why I'm calling is because I'm pregnant. I need to know how pregnant. Am I a bit more pregnant than yesterday? Or, you know, and this was keeping me sane. So not just the little pregnancy tests in my suitcase,
Did you have
one
any
per
left by
day.
that point?
I did. I had enough
Ooh.
that lasted me each day. So I was away for a month and those pregnancy tests lasted me. And even when I got home, I still kept testing because they say it wears off. You know, that unless I'm in a scan, I was not believing that I was pregnant. So cut to, I made it out of quarantine. And the other thing was I hadn't seen my younger sister for a couple of years and she lives in Sydney. So I got to wave from the balcony above and tell her, you know, kind of in person that I'm pregnant. So that was quite funny and awesome. And I had a laundry and a balcony and, you know, air, and I could walk, like I walked laps of my apartment because that feeling, that cabin fever feeling of being stuck for 2 weeks and I couldn't leave was really weird. And you could go insane, honestly. And I cannot imagine anyone who wasn't in my position. Like obviously I was in a health hotel with people that needed to be there for health reasons. And so the nurses would come around and check your blood pressure and also all sort of check-ins each day. But what I also had again was my lovely fertility specialist. I'm going to say his name, Luke Rombouts. I want to give him a shout out. There's a reason why my son's middle name is Luke. And it's not just him. My younger brother's also his middle name. It was a happy, awesome coincidence. But Mr. Luke, Professor Luke Rombouts, he organized medication from Melbourne to Sydney. And then he, well, because what happened was you go to Spain and you get all your bag of drugs and it's all, you know, obviously in a different language and you get taught how to use it all, but it ran out and I'm in quarantine, stuck. So I needed the hardcore drugs, and the drug that ran out was a drug that has to be jabbed into your leg, like your thigh, for a whole minute, and it's hot, like it's hot oil kind of. I don't know if it's the progesterone. I don't want to even say the name anymore because the names are gone out of my head. But I'm talking over the phone. I had to be told how to do this crazy injection, like in my thigh.
Is
And
that because
so
it was donor egg as well, rather than?
I don't know if it was just to support the pregnancy, because I think it was for about 10 weeks. It was all of that. So I don't think it's to do with the donor. I think it's to do with the pregnancy and the fact that you're considered high risk. And I honestly don't know, but I would have taken whatever they
Yeah, I guess
gave.
maybe it's because technically, they didn't think you'd be able to get pregnant by yourself. It's making sure that your body can support a pregnancy that
Yes,
wouldn't have done it
exactly.
naturally. Yeah.
Yes, and it is, yeah, it's to what it is, I think, is whatever they give you, it's until the placenta takes over. So it's while the placenta is developing. So I remember that part because I could stop it, I think it was about 10 weeks or so. And so I had Dr. Luke writing me the requests for getting the blood tests and the scripts and being so supportive. And I have to also mention his secretary or personal assistant, Karen. Like she's just, I'd call her and say, it's your favorite patient, me again, you know, and she would do whatever she could to help me. And I've actually visited them since with baby Leo just to say thank you. And, you know, you never forget the people that supported you, but there's a certain point where you don't see them anymore. Your acupuncturist and all of these people you don't get to see, but they all helped you get there. So
I'm now like really good friends with my acupuncturist, so that
there you
works.
go. Isn't that so true? You know, like there's so many people that help you get there. And so I got home finally, and my mum and my brother came to pick me up from the airport, and it just felt like an absolute lifetime since I had seen them. I made it home. I got refunds on the flight that I wasn't supposed to be sold. I got refunds on things that, you know, didn't go my way to do with the bank. And then I started repaying all of these loans, you know, and it's been tough, but you know, I would have, and I was stuck there. Like I felt like I was never coming home, and it was just so such a weird and horrible feeling. And I even got like my lovely principal boss from my school gave me, quickly approved extra timing, not timing, annual leave. No, long service leave, using the wrong words. It is very late. So, you know, all of that, there's all these things that helped me, you know, get there and get home. And none of it had anything to do with the getting pregnant part. So all of that went perfectly fine. There was never an issue. So here I am, 43, pregnant.
Wow.
Crazy stuff.
So if anyone else is in the same situation where they're considering Spain, there is no COVID.
Exactly.
Is it generally a cost-effective way to do it?
Well, it wasn't in my scenario because I got stuck there. But before that, I would say yes, because I probably did mention as well that I ended up only with two embryos with a similar starting point to Madeline. But because, I don't know, I felt like there's so many things they do to try and help you. So they try and get your, what they say, your twin, as in an egg donor that looks like you. There's so many parts like that, because they ask you, you know, like, what are you interested in? Do you want someone with similar hair or similar
did you
education?
Have, like, sperm donors here where you get a list of things to choose from,
no,
or do they choose it for you?
It is 100% anonymous. I'll say 99.9% anonymous. The only thing I was allowed to find out was that my egg donor was 30. So there's no choosing anything. That's all their job. And I know what.
And that's sperm as well, is it?
Sperm as well. So the sperm was just, I could choose Spanish sperm or international sperm. And I thought, well, let's go Spain, because I believe the egg donor was Spanish. And in the end, I had to let that go. And there's that whole grieving process of, I'm not using my own eggs. And now there's this, I was going to go with this beautiful Madeline, who I would have known so much about, and I could have contacted her about, you know, medical history and things like that. And now there's so many unknowns, and I have sort of just cleared my mind of all of that, because my baby's just mine. And so whatever we deal with as we go, I bring it up if I need to, like at medical appointments, or if he's got something that I'm questioning, I wonder if, oh, maybe that's, you know, in his medical history. But I call him a little
medical history of either side that you get. Nothing.
Well, they do their checks. So they do whatever, according to their law, is making that donor healthy. So I don't have the exact details of what they do to check. I don't believe it's just any person off the street. You know what I'm saying? Like, they have their protocols that they have to follow. But I do call him a little house deposit for a reason. So I know it's not cheap. It's not cheap here. It's not cheap there. Green eggs and ham, it's not cheap anywhere. Honestly, like, this is your commitment. And I say the same thing about that. You can always find love. I can always make more money. I can always work on my finances. This was a time-sensitive thing in my life. And I haven't said it yet, but like you, I just had to be a mum. In my lifetime, I had to, and I can't believe that I am still sometime. I just had to, and I am. So I'm grateful still every day, no matter how tired I am, listen to my voice. I also wanted to say my OB let me come in whenever I wanted to get a scan. She had her little Doppler machine, not that amazing as the ones you go to the actual, you know, centres to get, but the anxiety and the worry and the stress that I had every, I don't want to swear, minute of my 38 weeks and 2 days, it didn't leave me. And while I was lying there,
even when you could feel him move, it didn't.
Well,
leave.
Here's the thing. I had the, what do you call it, anterior placenta. So my movements were slight. Obviously, my tummy got bigger and bigger and bigger, but it wasn't until I was lying on that bed, getting that heartbeat or seeing the baby move, that I could breathe and go, they're fine. Like, didn't at that stage know it's a boy, but they're fine. I wasn't also going to find out about the sex. So I feel like that's something that, you know, I always thought to myself, whatever it is, a blessing. And so when I got that, the testing, what do they call that? The NIPT? At 10 weeks or so, I actually made my doctor cross it out with text her, and I said, I don't want to know, so cross it out. And then they come to a point, I think it was about 20 weeks pregnant, and I wanted to do like a little gender reveal just for mum. And I wanted to not look away, like any scan, I didn't want to have to, you know, not look. So I did a little gender reveal box for her, but I thought, well, how am I going to find this out now? Because it's crossed out. I got my phone torch, and I looked on the side, and I saw X, Y, and I thought, what does that mean? I Googled male. And so I'm like, okay, I know I'm having a son. That, like, so, well, I don't talk about chromosomes in grade two. I don't know other teachers that might, but no. Well, that was the only part I could read. It said male next to that, but that was underneath the black text, it was the only bit I could read. And so it's so weird because I always thought I would have a girl. So I don't know why I was so happy to hear boy, or just to know, like then I could start naming him. And I also thought morbidly, if it didn't work out, I would know what I had in my tummy. And so didn't want to even think about that. But it was just bizarre, I guess, because I've got such a close relationship with my mum. I always thought, well, I'm just going to have a daughter and we're going to have a mum and daughter relationship like my mum. But there's something about boy mums and there's something about boys that is just so special. And I know obviously girls are special too. And to me, like, because I've got a younger brother, we still call like he's the baby of the family, who's 31, still lives with my mum, still gets treated like the baby, lucky him. But I know that special boy relationship, son relationship that my mum has with my brother. So I guess in that way, I'm just, either way, I would have been on board, you know, and so happy.
So you didn't get to have any say in the egg or sperm donor in the end after everything you've gone through with all your careful choosing here. So I guess that doesn't matter what you were looking for because you didn't get a say. So have you thought about when Leo gets older, how you'll navigate that? The fact that it's just an unknown?
Yes. So I had a book made, and I even had the book made with my photos at the end, so that he can know already the word donor. I understand that a lot of people are wanting to know about history or what it would have been, or like you mentioned about, you know, donor siblings. Well, there aren't any. And it's sort of bizarre because I can say what I think now, but of course I won't know until we're down the track. You know, so many kids at school, they're adopted or come from a split family, or however they might have come about. You know, even the IVF way of coming about has been in the past something that you know, hasn't quite been talked about. And I'm so open to the point that I'm probably annoying people about my journey. And anyone dare say that he's got a dad? No, he hasn't. He's got a donor. I will correct them and I will talk about anything you want and I'll make sure he knows that. And so I want him to be proud that he was chosen. There was no baby that I adopted. There was no embryo that I adopted. I had him made. Like I created that child out of love. And so he will know that. And I hope. Really, really hope without getting emotional that he knows that. And I don't want that to impede on his, you know, emotional happiness at all in his whole entire life. So I really hope if one day he listens to this, and I'm sure he will if I make him, that he knows how loved and wanted he is and was and always will be. So he's one lucky little bubba. Can I also just say that there's not really anything to say about my pregnancy. It was quite uneventful. I was actually lucky that I got to be a teacher at home with a big pregnant belly on Zoom. So while people were complaining
There were some
about
benefits to COVID in
there
that
were
lockdown.
that
Yeah.
was probably the only. The other thing was at our school, there was always a tradition of putting out a bowl of jelly babies. And I've worked at my school for 12 years and I saw those jelly babies come and go. And I thought one day I'll get to put out those jelly babies. And then COVID comes along. I'm like, I'm not going to get my jelly babies. And guess what? In all the coming and going and toing and froing, I got to do my morning of jelly babies and got to live that dream through. Didn't get my baby shower, which is, you know, fine. A lot of people obviously that had babies when I did had it online. And so instead I saved the venue date as his first birthday. So I got to have a big first birthday for him, which was fantastic. I wouldn't have probably done that otherwise. So that was a fantastic way to celebrate. But there was one interesting little story about the birth. He had a true knot. I don't know if you've heard of those before, a knot in his umbilical cord.
Oh.
It can result in death, basically. So it's like 1%, less than 1% of babies it happens to. So when they're little, they would have done a somersault. And I had a planned cesarean because of my age and because of what I'd been through. I knew I wanted just a planned safe birth. And it basically saved him that if I had tried to give birth naturally, I don't know if he would have survived. My OB said her heart stopped. So she has
Goodness,
seen, I
yeah,
think, a
so.
few of them in her time. Not very good. But also I didn't know until after my beautiful mum had cut the cord, and she said, "Now that he's safe, we can tell you he had that knot." And I've got photos of it, and it's just an actual big knot in his umbilical cord. But the good thing was it still had all the blood flow, so he wasn't in any danger in that moment. But if he'd been kept in any longer and had less room, who knows, you know, if he would have been okay. But that was the last bit of drama. Yeah.
So obviously your mum sounds like she's been around for a lot and very, very supportive. Was she supportive the moment you made the decision?
She's been that person who I can tell like any crazy idea to, and she'll be like, "Yep, I get it. What do we have to do? Like, how do we, you know, how do we get on board? How can I help?" She was helping me, you know, choose the sperm donor and all of that. So yes, she's been absolutely 100% on board. And now we've been 3 months where Leo hasn't said mama, he said nana more days than saying mama, and I'm like, hang on a minute. And so sometimes I feel like we're interchangeable, he could take either one of us, but then now he knows the difference. So she has him one day a week, and he'll still jabber about nana a million times, but then he knows when mama's home, obviously. He's, you know, waiting for that in the day. But they've got such a like special little relationship. They've got their own little, you know, jokes and little habits and things like that, and she's just chuffed and in love with that little boy. So she's yeah, she's very supportive, and that's why I kept talking about who needs a husband, because I don't need one. I've got mum. Yep. So I've tried to give her days off too. So he's at daycare a couple of days a week now, but even on my days off, she'll still come over and maybe we'll go to the park or we'll go and do some shopping. And I don't know for any other solo mums, but how hard is it just to go with a pram to the supermarket? Like, I do mainly online shopping, but isn't it lovely just to walk around the shops and actually choose some food? And what do you then? Put it in the bottom of your pram? Do you put him in the trolley? Like, there's a lot of that, you know, logistic stuff that I'm like, how do I have a shower? How do I go to the toilet? You know, and we've had to just deal with that at every stage of how, what size he is. So sometimes he's in something that's contained. Like at the moment, a girlfriend has lent me one of those cars, you know, a big red car.
Oh, yeah.
Loves the Wiggles. Yeah. And so I've actually pushed the car into the toilet. Or he's got a low, like a high chair with like low legs, and I sit him in that so I can have a shower. So there's all those sort of little tricks that you do to be able to get through, and just to have mum there has been wonderful. So, you know, she's got the chair, the car seat in her car if she needs to pick him up or anything like that. So in that way, I feel like I am supported. I'm very lucky.
Yeah. And is motherhood what you thought it would be?
Yes. And again, I went through like a whole year of disbelief. Like I accept it now, because I say the words parent, mum and son, our baby, so many times in the day, and it's like a whole new world. But I'm just loving it. No matter how tired I am, you know, he's on my mind all day. I want those updates, I want those photos. You know, I love the app from the daycare, or mum sending me through photos or videos. I hate to be away from him, but it's a whole nother world as well, being back at school. I have to like switch my brain, teacher mode, but I use him throughout the day in all my examples. If there's anything I can slip his name into, you know, with the kids in class, I will do it. So I know you were saying the same thing before. I am content is the word. So I can just live life now, and I can have other goals, but it was such a milestone achievement in my life. I just cannot convey like the gratitude that to have this baby in this world, and he's mine forever until he's 18 and wants to leave me.
Which is might fine. Be like your little brother and still be at home at 31. So
yes, you know. I'll be fine with that.
Is there anything you think you'd do differently if you were to go back now?
It's really hard to say, because it was such a weird time, like with Spain and COVID and everything else. And I don't know that I knew enough about even egg freezing. Like, say I had frozen my eggs at 30 or before the decline was, like, I don't even know what kind of condition my eggs were when I was 20. I really don't know that history, and it would have been nice to know, but I have let that go. It's really hard to say, because from what I, you know, hear of even things like stats with eggs, what if I had frozen eggs and used them, and it just didn't work anyway. Like I don't know if I could have handled that disappointment. So I can't say that I would change anything. Like obviously that it would be nice not to be in the financial position that I was and am in. But that's solo mum life. And I say I'm solo mum by choice. Don't feel sorry for me. I quickly say that because sometimes like mum talks to my lovely neighbor and says, she's a solo mum. And they say, oh, like she's been left as a solo mum. No. She went through hell to be this solo mum proudly. So I'll shout from anyone who wants to listen about being a mum. So, and I'm just now I've got that whole nother level of appreciation and support from, friends that are mums that it might be a little bit older than me. And so, for example, Leo's starting daycare and their kids are starting high school and they've got that same kind of milestone, heart crushing moment, losing your baby again almost to high school. So I know there's going to be those moments throughout the years that it'll happen and I'll get used to it. But also having my mum, be able to support me and her to have that joy, that's like a gift I've given her as well, if that makes sense. So yeah, I've just can't believe it, but I have accepted it in the same breath, if that makes sense.
And so you said you've got two embryos in Spain.
Well, I've got one left. So Leo was one, and I've actually recently made the decision that I am going to let it go. So I paid for a year of storage, but I don't believe I could recreate that again. I don't think I could put my body through it again, and I don't desire to be a solo mum of two by choice. And if one day in the future I meet a partner, I'm assuming they might have kids. If they don't, whatever. But I don't desire to make life harder financially or with my time. So I get to give Leo all the love in the world. I'm very lucky that best friend of mine had a baby boy 8 weeks ahead of me. So he's got a built-in little bestie. We've got, I don't know how it worked out, but four of my mum's group bubbas are at the same daycare in the same room. So two started and we followed. So I am creating his own little community and I don't care that he's going to be his own only child. So, I mean, he might one day, but I have to let that go. And it's again, sounds morbid to say if the worst happened, I couldn't replace him. And I don't want to. So I am going through the steps now of letting that embryo go, which is actually not easy. You can't just ring up and say, let that one go. Do you know what was really odd? I actually asked if I could get the microscope slide sent to me as a memento, or if they make like a jewelry or a keepsake out of the embryo, which sounds really gross, like ashes in a way, and they don't do it. Against Spanish law, so I have to let that go as well, and I just have to be okay with the fact that I was successful and how lucky I am. And not everyone goes through that. You hear of women going through years and years of this, and they don't get the joy at the end. So count my lucky stars.
Have you met anyone else in Australia that's been through Spain in the same clinic you had?
Well, I'm part of a Facebook group too. One that is made and run by Australian women. I think two of them are from Queensland. And so it's quite well known within that the IVF community. And then no one in person, but I'm in contact with those women. And then I'm also part of the successful part of things for that clinic. So we're part of a mother's from that clinic Facebook group. So we get to celebrate births and milestones and just life in general, tips or things that might come up, like I said, about the books or how you might navigate things in the future. I'm part of a couple of solo mum by choice Facebook groups. Some are Victorian, some are they've got some international members, but in that way, I actually realized I was part of way too many groups. Like I had to let go a few because, you move through certain strains in your journey, and I no longer need to be part of the IVF discussions, which is great to sort of graduate from that. But I then have to, feel for the people that are, still hopeful and trying to go through that. So you can get a certain amount of support, but you can also be overloaded. I called it my, it was like a second full-time job. Like I was fairly dedicated to that job and now I've achieved it.
And I think there's a stage you go through where you want to be on those groups and providing hope to other people that are going through it as
Yes.
well. But after a while, it, like you say, it just becomes a lot.
Yes. And while I could contribute and I do and I have, I try and be more of an observer and not put in a comment or something that is not going to be helpful or productive. So, you know, there's obviously a lot that you could get involved in a lot of Facebook pages or whatever your social media choice is. I guess I'm just choosing always to be positive and try not to live too much online because you can get a little bit bogged down by it. We see a lot of, you know, images in all sorts of ways. We could have a whole nother discussion about, you know, gender equality and all of that. In our lifetime, I really hope that our kids, as in you and I, are brought up into a world that is much more accepting and open and kind.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
Sure, it's gonna be.
If we've got anything to do with it, they will be.
And so, if anyone is at the stage where they are considering going to Spain, because they and they're in the same situation, is there any advice that you'd give them?
I would say the mock trials were, and sounds funny to say it, but they were, I think, fantastic because you're trusting that something's going to work overseas. And I know a lot of people from the UK, these groups in this group does this to do as much beforehand as you can to hope for the success when you're over there. It's a lot of like medical miracle type things, but there are things that you can follow, like these trials, which were basically like a dry run. And it allows them to make the right calculations and the right drugs and all of that sort of thing that you need. So it's not just a shot in the dark. It really is, you know, doing it with all of the information and all of the chances in your favor. So I think don't be scared of it, especially places that this is what they do. This is they're IVF Spain. They're not I mean, I'm not advertising them in any way, but in any of these places, obviously there's certain doctors and certain, you know, international contacts that you that will all consult or whatever you want to call it, an admin person that you are in contact with. And it's like anywhere in Australia, you're going to get people that you get along with and people that give you the runaround. And like that first IVF well-known doctor that laughed at me, thanks for nothing. But in that way, you need to find who's right for you. So yes, jump on the forums. Yes, jump on the pages, but make your own decisions in the end. And you do definitely need that support system. So you can get sort of, yeah, bogged down by too much information or too many different opinions. So you really need to yeah, make the decision for yourself. But if you want it and you're willing to go that extra mile and you need donor eggs and you don't have someone, you know, offering in Australia, they're available. Like then it's not I mean, not to say that they've got them in storage, they actually get them fresh. They have their donors that they use and they try and yeah, meet all of your needs and expectations. So it's funny, you know, like I'm not sure if you've even seen a photo of Leo, you can see it, but he can pass for mine. If he had come out with red hair and brown eyes, I wouldn't have cared. You know, I don't mind if he's not a little mini me, but honestly, I think he's mine. I grew him. And there's so much epigenetic stuff that I read about that I believe, you know, he'll have mannerisms or, you know. But there's one last thing I wanted to say as well, and that just is his name. So I do love Titanic, of course. So Leonardo came from there. But Leo, my mum's name is Leda. So the L-E in Leo is like L-E in Leda. So hers is spelled L-E-D-A. He's got Luke for my brother, who's that's his middle name. So Leo Luke. And like I said, the happy coincidence, Dr. Luke, spelled differently, but that's okay. And then he gets my surname, which is Wardley. So I don't know if I should say that on the podcast, but honestly, who cares? I am just wanting to give, you know, a little bit of him and a little bit of that family connection to everyone that's close to me, and he's got it. So, Yeah, in that way, there's no confusion of who it belongs to.
Very much yours. What an incredible story. I'm still just trying to get over the fact that you got stuck in Spain and everything you had to get through, but I know that a lot of people are going to really love listening to the story, regardless of whether they need to anything close to the same journey you did or not. So thank you
Thank
so much for
you.
sharing, Amanda.
If you need to read Glennon Doyle's book, Untamed, because that saying, we can do hard things, it just kept going through my mind. And you know the old Bob Marley, every little thing is going to be all right. I've got that as a quote in Leo's room. Like, just, you've got to have your own little mantras and chants and all sorts of things to get yourself through. So I wish all of your listeners luck if they are still on that journey. And thank you for listening to my story.
I'm Alicia, and this is the No Need for Prince Charming podcast, bringing you stories of Australian solo mums who created their own happy ending. If you like what you heard, please follow or subscribe to make sure you don't miss out on future episodes, and leave a like, a review, or share with your friends to help others find it easier. Bye for now.